Elsa, we come to order. Brothers and sisters, the house will come to order. Brothers and sisters, just an announcement. If you want a particular bill up at a particular time, it's not as easy as just waving the magic wand and having it happen. That being said, we will have some additional bill introductions this afternoon. And the majority floor leader will announce those bills that we did try to wave the magic wand and make it happen when it comes to that time. We're now at that order of bills on second reading. Well, I guess we've got reports from standing committees. We're now in that order of business of reports from standing committee.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 34, Solid Waste Cease and Transfer Eligibility, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Cannaday, Greer, Kasperic, Larson, Lockhart, Reeder, Somers, and Winters. Signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
I'm not.
Okay.
We are now at that order of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 2.
House Bill 2, as introduced by the Education Committee.
House Bill 2, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 4.
House Bill number 4 is introduced by the Agricultural Committee.
House Bill 4, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 6.
House Bill number 6 is introduced by the Judiciary Committee.
House Bill 6, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 9.
House Bill number 9 is introduced by the Judiciary Committee.
There is an amendment. It looks like there are two amendments. Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I might be a little rusty here, but I'll move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 9. And ask for your favorable consideration. What I was trying to do is take some of a little bit of the uncertainty, maybe some of the softer language out of this bill. So what the amendment does, when you look at the bill on page 3, excuse me, line 2, is it deletes brews. And again, that is a, I guess it's so easy to bruise. People bruise different ways. And we talked about the seriousness of this bill. And I do like the fact that we're trying to clear this definition up. Not that I'm against that. I just want to make sure that we're not making criminals out of people that don't have the intent. The second component of this, excuse me. Is on page 2, line 5, is after pain, I just want to insert the physical pain, or, and then we've got illness, is get that deleted out of there, so that it would go from physical pain or the impairment of the function of a bodily member, organ, or mental faculty. And I did discuss this very briefly with the good chairman of Judiciary, and understand that this is being met with some favorable consideration. Again, maybe I'll step back and let the chairman of Judiciary speak, get a glass of water, and then have any rebuttal if necessary.
Chairman Gingrey for the first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That amendment's fine. All we were doing, that's on the part he's amending is on the misdemeanor side, so that's the low end. And we were copied from some other states, and those are fine changes. So I have no objection to those.
Anyone else for your first time? First time. Second time prior to the sponsor. Representative Greer?
Mr. Speaker, I just encourage the body to go along with this. We've got the blessing from the Judiciary Committee. Let's just firm this bill up. Please pass the amendment. Thank you.
We're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill number 9. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill number 9 has passed. We are now on second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 9. Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move second reading amendment number 2. These some slight modifications to the definition of serious bodily injury. Once again, I've gone through these changes, I think, with the chairman of Judiciary, and I don't think there's any great deal of feedback on it. But in essence, I'm just trying to tighten it down. Remember that we're talking about a felony of up to 10 years imprisonment. And so I wanted the language to be a bit more succinct on what we were talking about. The first change, if you go down to page 2, line 19, instead of saying just cause protracted or chronic physical pain, my thought was that was a little bit too vague on what protracted pain is, whether it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 2 days or 4 days. And so what the amendment has causes severe physical pain. Then the next change, if you go down to it, beginning at page 2, lines 22 through 24, previously it was said creates a substantial risk of protracted and significant disfigurement. And I don't know what protracted significant disfigurement is or the risk thereof, and they talk about a risk of it. And so what I've substituted in is that it causes severe disfigurement and without overtime. And so I'm just saying if you're going to have a chance of having 10 years in prison, that the injury has to be significant. And then if you go to page 3, the next major change has to do with the concussions or losing consciousness, and the amendment takes it from a substantial risk of protracted loss of impairment to as it reads now, causes unconsciousness or a concussion resulting in protracted loss of impairment. So we're saying if, in fact, the unconsciousness or the concussion results in any type of protracted loss of impairment, then that's a significant physical injury. And then finally, two more things. On burn, the way it was written, you can't tell if what percentage of the body constitutes a severe injury. And so I said it has to be a significant portion of the body. In other words, it can't be a centimeter. It can't be for example, if you're in the sun for too long and you negligently leave your young child out there and get a 2% or a second-degree burn, theoretically you could go to jail for 10 years. And so I just want to clarify and make it a little more succinct on what it is. And finally, I took out the broken bones. It says causes a significant bone break. Once again, we don't know what a significant bone is. If it's your pinky finger or your thumb or if you push somebody down and they put down and they break their wrist, that can be a significant broken bone. And the question is, does that deserve to be up to 10-year fine as a felony? I would submit that it does not. And so if you have any questions, those are the outline of the changes that I proposed, and I would turn it over back to the good speaker.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really appreciate the good work put forward by the good representative. He has a lot of knowledge on the legal medical terms since he does a lot of cases with those, and I think these are much better terms that he's using. Using the word severe and using resulting in and then the significant portion of the body parts. So I'd urge you to vote aye for those. There is some concern with he's deleting out lines 10 and 11 on the significant bone break or fractures, and I think the good representative from the Salt River Range is going to maybe divide out the amendment, but the other things that he brought forward I think are all good changes.
Representative Halverson, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to move a division of this amendment.
Go ahead.
I would like to, division 1 would be lines 1 through 16, and division 2 would be lines 17 and 18.
The chair finds that division is acceptable. Let's proceed on division 1. Representative Halverson, for your first time on division 1.
Oh, I support Division 1, Mr. Speaker.
Okay. Anyone else on Division 1? Question being called for. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill number 9, Division 1, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Second reading amendment number 2, Division 1 to House Bill 9 has passed the House. We are now on Division 2. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We went over this in committee all interim and then again yesterday. And the part about the broken bones seems always to be reduced to the mutual combat bar fight. We all know that with the knockout game going around, these games are malicious. They do result in broken bones, even if it is a finger or a wrist, and I think that rises to a felony. Thank you.
Anyone else on Division 2? Division 2, prior to the sponsor. Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would just submit that broken bones in your hand or an arm do not rise to a 10-year felony. So I would move for the call for the vote.
Chairman Harvey, for your first time on Division 2.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I jumped up too late to talk about Division 1, but when it talked about burns over a significant part of the body, I thought about a case that I know of where there were not significant parts of the body, but where the burns, the cigarette burns were, did not cover a significant part of the body, but it certainly was abuse. And if the fingers are broken during somebody catching themselves in a fall, it kind of depends on if they were slugged in the face, or in my case, I'm pretty tipsy. You could just push me over and I'd probably break something. But I think that if we take broken bones out of there, we're taking a significant part out. I think that still, when a bone is broken, and even if it's just a finger bone, how did it get broken? Was it in the catch of a fall, or did somebody put your finger in a pair of pliers and break it? So I think that by eliminating broken bones from this bill, by amending it out, I think we are just playing into the hands of those people who engage in domestic violence. And I think that we have a responsibility to protect people who are victims of domestic violence. And so I think that it is extremely necessary to keep at least broken bones in.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, would you come up here? Chairman Gingrey, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to let you know where the committee, we had long discussions on this. If you remember, we had this bill last year, and the bones was what sort of stopped this bill last year. Here's our issue with this particular statute. How the courts have interpreted the current language, it's extremely difficult to ever get a felony on a battery now, because how they've interpreted our current language is that it has to be a permanent injury. That's very difficult to ever show. So what's, I think, most important to keep in mind while you're trying to debate this bill is we have to agree that the current bill just can't stay. We got to make a change to at least cover some of these people. So if where I come down on it, if it means giving up the bone breaks to get the rest through, that's fine, because I know on the other body they're going to have some discussions on the bones. We had a lot of discussion on the word significant. That's why we put the word significant in, because last year everybody kept talking about pinky breaks and, you know, you stubbed your toe or something like that. This was significant breaks. This was when, and we had testimony about, in particularly here in Laramie County, they have had numerous cases where the bones of the face have been broken, and the prosecutor cannot show that that's substantial, and so there has to be a misdemeanor. Vote either way on that, but what's most important is that we have to do something to get this bill through. Otherwise, we really don't have we're getting to the point we don't have a felony battery in this state.
Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. As a freshman, I had an interesting tenure under a great legislator of many years from Casper, Wyoming, and she was always very, very particular about language, and she said then and taught us all that if you didn't know what the language meant, that perhaps you shouldn't vote for it. And a good representative from Rock Springs and I had lots of training in that committee on proper language. And so if you look at lines 10 and 11, it says, cause a significant bone break or fracture. Does that mean that it's a break of a significant bone or that the fracture or break is significant? And I can't tell from this language. And so whether you want to have this language in the bill or not, I think is important, but I think that what we ought to do is vote for this amendment on this reading, because I can't tell you what this language means, and then come back with a third reading amendment that's a little more clear. Anyone else for your first time? First time. Second time. Second time. Because Representative Halverson did the division, she gets the last speak. She's not the sponsor. So, Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And just, I was going to go through that language analysis that you just did, but I can't do it half as good as you can. But I would just point out that if you have a facial fracture or anything like that, to me, that comes within a definition of severe protracted physical pain. And so instead of looking at whether or not a bone is broken, you just determine whether or not that person is severely injured. And if they are, then they come within the definition. And so I just think it's a better way to handle it and less ambiguous. Thank you.
Anyone else prior to the sponsor? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I stand by the original discussion in the committee that a significant bone break is a break of a bone which requires medical attention, perhaps a cast, bandage, and does cause impairment, and usually is a result of something felonious. Thank you.
It's easy for me to say. We're voting on Division 2 to Second Reading Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 9. All in favor of Division 2, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Division 2 has failed. We are back on the bill. House Bill Number 9, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 10.
House Bill Number 10 is introduced by the Agricultural Committee.
There is an amendment. Representative Semlett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I respectfully withdraw Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 10. The language in the amendment has created some confusion. I'll try to straighten that out and bring it back in the third reading.
Second Reading Amendment Number 10 is withdrawn. House Bill Number 10, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Brothers and sisters, as you know, the cutoff was today at noon for bills being submitted to the LSO. Following House bills and joint resolutions were signed and submitted and accepted by the LSO. prior to noon, Wednesday, February 12, 2014. House Bills 1 through 179 and House Joint Resolutions 1 through 5. We are now at that order of business of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor of resolving into Committee of the Whole, say aye.
Aye.
Now, those opposed, no. House is resolved into Committee of the Whole. Representative Burkhart.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 7. Reader will please read the bill.
House Bill Number 7, as introduced by the Judiciary Committee. An act relating to crimes and offenses.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 7 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Before I turn it over to the good gentleman from Natrona County to explain the bill, we just had an amendment. We took out subsection B on page 2. It got too specific, and we didn't mean for that to be there. So, Mr. Chairman, if you want to just deal with that amendment real quick, and then I'll turn it over for explanation.
You heard the reading of the amendment. Okay. Okay. You've heard the motion. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 passes. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, if I could turn it over to the good gentleman from Natrona County, and he'll explain the bill.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I give you House Bill Number 7, Unlawful Entry into Occupied Structure. This is a bill that originally was brought to us last year by one of the good representatives from here in Cheyenne, because there was a case that kind of brought the need for this bill up, where there was a woman who was in her house, and there was a gentleman who was on the run, burst into her home, and beat her up, and then fled the scene when the police arrived. And they realized that they couldn't charge him as a felon because he didn't steal anything. And it was kind of a weird situation in our statutes, where you can break into somebody's home and steal a loaf of bread, and that was a bigger penalty than breaking into someone's home for the purpose of assaulting them and beating them silly. And the bill that we had last year kind of tried to insert home invasion into the burglary statutes, and it didn't quite work out, so we picked it up as an interim topic to find out how it would fit best. And so that's where this law comes in. It creates a new section of law that deals with a person who unlawfully enters basically somebody's home, is the intent of it, somebody's home or a place that they're staying for the intent of committing assault. It makes that a bigger crime. The idea is, you know, your home is your castle, and it should be a little more than just a misdemeanor for assault, you know, breaking into somebody's home for assaulting them. So I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the question I have, and I'm sorry, I hope it wasn't covered by the Standing Committee Amendment, but looking under the definitions of occupied structure, I understand the intent, but looking under A, about defining it where any person lives or carries on a business, it made me of a mind that, you know, you may have a bar, people work in a bar, they carry on business in a bar, somebody decides to go to that bar to find somebody to, you know, pick a fight with them, and then is that all of a sudden you've committed a felony under this act?
Representative Croker.
Thank you. I actually have an amendment that's coming on second reading that's going to deal with that very issue.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, another question, too. Maybe I'm not understanding this very well, but on page 1, that line 15 says, with the intent to commit battery, why isn't it if they enter and commit a battery? What I don't. Someone's going to have to explain to me why we're going to delve into somebody's intent in this matter, and what was the committee thinking here?
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe the answer there is do they need to actually injure somebody to violate the your person? I mean, if somebody comes into my home in the night, attacks me, and I happen to be quick enough to avoid his assault and fend him off until the police arrive, I would think that just the intent that he entered my home with the purpose of trying to harm me is should be enough to be a crime.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, so it was, we find somebody in somebody else's home, we are going to delve into their intent as to why they were there. It doesn't really cause this. You're thinking that it requires an affirmative action or some sort of action on the part of the person, but that's not what this says, so I'm a little concerned about that component of it.
Chairman Gingrey, did you want to add something?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the first, let me deal with the first aspect on the carry-on's business. That is something on second reading we could take out. What our intent was to get at was where you live, where you're at. And so that was that aspect. And I think the good representative for Natrona was going to bring something on second reading to talk about that. As to intent, what we were trying to do was last year this bill was brought and put into burglary. And we didn't think burglary was the place to put it, because what the language was last year was that you entered a home with the intent to commit theft or battery. The problem is most of us think of burglary as just simply theft. We don't think of other crimes being affiliated with burglary. So that's why we pulled it out and made a separate and distinct statute. But we were still using the same type of language that you find in burglary. And what you find there is the intent to commit theft. Here you have the intent to commit battery. So the individual would enter the home. By not putting the word intent, what you would be saying is we have to wait outside and wait for them to actually commit the crime. If a person enters a home and you're able to stop them before they actually commit the battery, and you'd have to prove, you'd have to prove that that's what their intent was. And the good gentleman from Moreland is correct. It'd be difficult sometimes in many cases to prove that. But in some situations, it's not that hard to prove that the person had the means to do it, and that was their intent, was to commit battery against the person. Maybe that evidence comes through many times just through their own statements. Where you find that in burglary, a lot of times the intent is shown by they're entering into someone's home through a window and they have a crowbar in their hand. They haven't actually committed the theft yet, but it was clearly their intent to commit theft with the window up and the crowbar in their hand. That's the idea between about the words intent. We were taking the burglary and applying it to the occupied structure battery bill.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm struggling with the same problem as the previous speaker. Sort of at what point does one intend to commit the battery? If a burglar broke in that had a weapon and battered somebody with that weapon, then clearly they entered prepared to do battery. But if they found, their egress blocked and pushed somebody out of the way, That would be an unintentional battery or an incidental battery. So that's my concerns with the word intent. It's going to be a tough one to nail down. Thank you.
Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I would just submit that there's a safety valve in here, and that is that that intent has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury. It's not just what we say it is here. Those iffy cases are all going to be resolved in favor of the defendant. They're all going to be resolved to say there was no battery, and I think we all understand the concept of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. That's going to require proof beyond a reasonable doubt to convict somebody of having an intent to commit battery. And if there's any doubt about that intent, with an instruction from the court that it's proof beyond a reasonable doubt, a jury's going to acquit. Not because they didn't do it, not because they didn't think there was some intent there, but because the case was not overwhelmingly enough that they could say beyond a reasonable doubt, that's what the person was up to. So I think there's a big safety mechanism in here to protect people in those marginal cases.
Minority Floor Leader Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the good representative from the middle part of the state gave you an overview of the story, but I just want to read part of an email I received from the friend of a victim in this case who brought the issue to us last year, just to remind you of the gap we're trying to fill. As you may be aware, last January in Cheyenne, a woman was attacked by a naked and bloodied man. He kicked in the door of her apartment approximately 4 a.m. January 5th, 2013, and proceeded to beat, kick, and threaten to kill her. She did not know this man. She had never had any interaction with this man. There was no provocation. This man would have killed her if it wasn't for a neighbor hearing her screams and coming to her rescue. He was able to draw off the intruder, who followed him back to his home across the street and started trying to kick his door. I believe that is the way the police found him. Even after four taser shots, it took six officers to subdue him. I mean, that, to me, attorney, non-attorney, is conduct that should be a felony. But under our current statutes, it's not a felony. So we're trying to fill a gap here, a gap that needs filled, and obviously we have to be careful how we do it. But that's why we didn't go with the bill that was brought last year. This was done to give the Judiciary Committee time to look into it, and so they came up with this solution, which is narrowly tailored, and as the good majority floor leader reminded us all, every element has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a safety check. But what's appalling to me is that under our current law, a member of my community was terrorized in her home, and it was a misdemeanor. And that's just wrong, and we have to fix that. Thank you.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The good gentleman from Warland and I had a good conversation just now. I may bring a second reading amendment that changes with intent to that attempts or commits. That may be able to actually fix that issue. So we'll bring that on second reading.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. Just to clarify what the good lady from Laramie County, who resides near me, one anatomical story sometimes makes people misconceive what went on. That gentleman who broke into the house was actually, I think what we talked about last year, could have been charged up to 60 years for the conduct that he did in that particular incident. It was attempted murder. It was felony assault and lots of different things that he committed. So that's just an incorrect statement as to what that person can be guilty with, and that person should have gone to jail and did go to jail for a long time. With regards to this particular bill, I'm curious if you go to page 1, line 14, it talks about a separately secured portion of an occupied structure, and I would just like the bringer's clarification of what that means, because to me it's ambiguous. If you have an occupied structure, it's an occupied structure, and that seems to me to limit your defining term of what an occupied structure is on page two. So that to me, that just is a little bit confusing. Thank you.
Any further comments on the bill? Sensing you're ready to vote, all those in favor of Representative Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with a recommendation that House Bill 7 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. House Bill 7 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 40.
House Bill 40 from the Appropriations Committee, an act relating to administration of government, providing boards of cooperative educational services an option to participate in state employees and officials groups insurance plan, modifying provisions relating to voluntary participation by non-state employers, specifying participation and contribution requirements and procedures, and implementing payment mechanisms for participating boards and providing for an effective date.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harshman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 40 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, Standing Committee Amendment number one was inserted on page four, and I explained briefly in introduction that when folks opt into this state insurance plan, that they're all in, and they're in for 5 years. They can't come in with and get a few of their, maybe it's a small group, and get a few of their folks' operations done and then jump out after 6 months. Well, really, what could you do if they did withdraw? Well, we could certainly sue them. That's the idea. But we wanted to toughen up this language a little bit, and so we inserted this language. We didn't delete any on line 7, and it says, in addition to all the other remedies to the department, if a district or board withdraws from the state group insurance plan during the period of irrevocability, the department may assess against the withdrawing board or district the amount which the claims paid on behalf of the employees exceeds the total premiums. So it's one more kind of safeguard on that. So I'd stand for any questions.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number one has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, it's kind of a different circumstance that we have, as all committees, you assess floor management to certain bills. And the floor manager for this bill is the chairman of the Committee of the Whole today. So, Mr. Chairman, your pleasure.
Mr. Chairman, would you come up, please?
Okay. Chairman, Representative from Carbon County, Representative Burkhardt, it's good to be chairman. You can appoint whoever you want to be chairman after you. So to floor manage the bill, the good Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, we did this to make sure all of you were awake for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah.
So, because some of you look very confused. This bill, what it does is merely allows the BOCES organizations in the various communities to join the state group insurance plan. There are about 200 members. They have to join as a group from each BOCES, and that they have to all join so there's no adverse selection. And that's basically what the bill does. It allows them to participate just the same as the school districts and a number of other entities that participate in the insurance plan for the state. Most of the bill just merely makes that change, adds the BOCES organizations, the boards, in with the school districts. And the participation is voluntary, but has to be complete for each BOCES. Not you can't, if there's 10 people in a BOCES, you can't have 5 participate and 5 not. Requires some audits to be done, and they're under the same requirements for eligibility in that as school district employees, such as the school district in the center of the state. And that's the bill in general. This will be funded by the BOCES in the same manner as the school districts are.
So with that, I'll stand for questions.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question and concern really is based on the fact of how we treat other special districts. And maybe it's a great idea to allow all of the special districts the ability to join our group insurance program. And maybe it would actually somehow help decrease the premiums by making the pool larger. I don't know what the net result of that would be. My question is, did you have these kinds of conversations? Because once we start down this road, there are dozens of different types of special districts in the state. And, you know, I just don't want to make sure that we aren't opening up the Pandora's box and creating a situation where next year we're going to have 15 different special districts wishing to participate. And maybe we would decide that was a good idea. I don't know.
Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman, maybe just to respond a little bit to that question, there was some discussion, and you know, I don't think that's an unfounded concern. We had, as we began to work through the interim, requests by the irrigation districts to also join as part of the state plan, and ultimately rejected that effort. The reason, and I had many of those same concerns. The reason I sort of came around on the BOCES program is because it's in a gap. We have K through 12 that are able to get onto the state plan. We have community colleges that are on the state plan, and these are cooperative, you know, between the two. And so it really seemed to fit pretty well, given what we'd done with the rest of education. But we may well have a line of other people coming in and seeing if it makes sense to be on the state plan. In fact, we had the counties and local governments come in already and asked us for us to look at it this interim. So we certainly may have those requests, but as you said, as we look at those other agencies, it may ultimately make sense to bring them in.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Substitute Chairman. Could I just need a little help on could someone explain the fiscal note to me? Just saying we're going to pay for it like we do for the school districts gets a little lost in my simple mind. Just help me with that, please.
Representative Yagi.
That follows. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That follows along the question I had. I had an email from some BOCES in Southwest, and they were saying you need to vote for this. And of course, my concern is how is it going to be paid for? And the information that I got is the BOCES are paid by a mill levy from the local counties, and so this does not come out of the state fund. Is that correct?
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's correct. It does not come out of the state funds. They are paying for this just as the way they're already paying for their insurance that they have in other manners, whether it's private insurance or they're going with the school districts. It was merely to take advantage of the, call it, purchasing power of the state. And that the State Insurance Commission indicates that, you know, they don't need to add people or anything else to do this. It's such a small number of people, it will not impact them much. And again, the participants and their employers are paying for this.
Is there anybody else up there? Patton. Maybe Patton. No. Don't get close to the mic, Representative, or you might get called on. Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, and I apologize because I'm not getting this. So our fiscal note, that's the cost to the insurance or to these benefit plans, to the state plan, but it's 100% reimbursed by the individual BOCES. If I got an answer to my question, I didn't understand it.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The revenue increase comes from their premiums, which the individual participants pay for and the BOCES organizations pay for. And the expenditures are calculated to be roughly the same based on our insurance experience. The same as any agency in the state does. The agency is the employer. They participate as the employer in the state employees participate as the employee.
Any further questions from our country lawyer? Appreciate that. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm not a lawyer, so here's my question is that how do we had a little bit of an explanation about how we found a fit for BOCES, but we didn't include fire districts or some of those kinds of things. I wonder if this isn't a slippery slope that we're going down, that we found it in this case and going down there. And they can take advantage of the state program. And then whatever happens in the state program ultimately is going to come back to the state. And I'd like a little more explanation of that. We had one, but it didn't sync with me why this was, BOCES was so much different than some of the other pseudo-state functions that we perform that would also like to get into a master plan that has the benefits of economies of scale and so forth.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The analysis done by LSO indicated, to answer the question on why BOCES and not others, was that they fall in under the same criteria school districts would. We rejected a request from the irrigation districts because those districts are not really directly related to the state. That's almost a private entity. The BOCES organizations through the school districts and the community colleges, we felt come in under, and again, with analysis by LSO and the insurance department, felt that they came in under the same criteria as the community colleges. They're an extension of the community colleges and offer many of the same programs. And that was the logic there. The communities, the counties have come forward saying they would like to participate also. And that was not within the purview of the bill. And we haven't really discussed that. Actually, we rejected that pending a further analysis of that request. So it was well handled in the committee. There's precedent. The community colleges get it. K-12 can participate if they wish. I believe the large school district in the center of the state participates, but some of the other school districts prefer to go either self-insured or find their own insurance.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I deal a lot with BOCES and BOCES in my other job, and they struggle to keep costs down so that they can provide more services for their communities and their local schools. Anything that we can do to reduce their costs, I think, is going to have direct benefits to students and the community, and I urge your support of this bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Harshman's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 40 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
House Bill 40 has passed committee of the whole. Representative Burkhart.
Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 22. Reader will please read the bill.
House Bill number 22 from the Revenue Committee, an act relating to revenue and taxation, providing for interest for delinquent taxes determined from mineral audits as specified, removing conflicting language regarding the time of the audit, providing applicability, and providing for an effective date.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 22 do pass, and there are no standing committee amendments on the bill. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I probably won't have my usual handouts. This bill is right fresh out of the committee at 10 o'clock, and I had no idea it was coming up until about 10 after 2. So Anyway, I'll just give you an overall kind of a 20,000-foot summary of what the bill does, and then I'll go through what the language is described as. First of all, House Bill 22 will make uniform the interest rate and the relevant accrual period for ad valorem taxes that are accruing to the counties, and the mineral taxes or the severance taxes that are accruing to the state. So what we have now is let me point out first of all that House Bill 22 that we're talking about here only deals with that issue, and it only applies to amounts identified during a state audit. For example, there's a list of a lot of other ways taxes can be accruing and not paid or beyond being due, and I'll just give you a few examples. For example, these companies make changes or file notices of change of value of the resource they're dealing with, and it changes the value or the amount of the tax, it's still 18%, reasoning that they had to correct a value of a mineral that they were selling. So that's still going to be 18%. If payments are delinquent, if they're delinquent in the sense of just like you and I, if we don't pay our taxes by the end of December, we're delinquent, and we have to pay 18% per annum, and that's still going to be 18% for mineral companies, so they're treated the same. And it says if a taxpayer fails to even file a report, this is a self-reporting network here, and if they don't file a report and there's a tax owed, it's 18%. The next one, if he fails to make or file a return and remit the tax, it's also 18%, and in addition to that, there's up to a 5% penalty for being deficient as far as negligence in the intentional disregard of rules and regulations. So that gets back to what this bill is about. The only thing it applies to is mineral audits, and we're talking about the mineral audits from big companies that are done on a regular basis, and they're done for every single year, and they do it for 3 years at a time. I think we heard this morning that the 3 years that they're all working on now is 08, 09, and 10 or something like that, or maybe I'm a year off, but it's they go back a ways, and they study those 3 years to see if the taxes are due. Now, the outcomes from these things can be one of two ways. Number one, the possibility is that they paid too much. And if that happens, they're entitled to a refund from the local government, and the return they get is 0% interest, and the counties have 5 years to pay it off. The other possibility is that they don't pay enough, and then that means that they have to pay the counties. And that's the kind of deal we're talking about. Now, these audits, when they take place, there's two taxes they're studying or they're analyzing to see if they're accurate. One of them is the severance tax, as I said before, and one of them is the ad valorem tax that accrues to the county. Currently, the state charges 12% on severance taxes, and the county charges 18% on property or ad valorem taxes. Okay. Now, the history of this was that, you know, we've been working on it 2 years, and we, the kind of the exercises we went through to come to a conclusion on this, we had the industry and the counties come up with ideas and prototypes of bills, and we met and shared the drafts with both sides. And we did come up with a fairly good compromise. Neither side was totally happy, and that's kind of the way compromises are, I guess. But we came up with a compromise that is embodied in House Bill 22. Now, I guess what I'll do now is go through the bill, and you don't want to be intimidated by the size of the bill because it's replicative, and I'll show that to you. The way our chapter is arranged for minerals is we have it divided into sections, and each section is a certain mineral. Okay, so we've got coal in one, and oil in one, gas in another, and trona, and so on. And the deal is that these audits happen in all these industries, and we're treating them all the same. For amounts that are discovered in an audit. So if you got your bill in front of you, let's just walk through the changes. The first change you'll see is on page 2, and there's a strikeout there. And during the time I was researching this and traveling around the state using my constituent service allowance to meet with these people, in preparing for them, I discovered there's two paragraphs in the bill that are in conflict with one another, and I talked to the Revenue Department about it and says, well, yeah, we never noticed that, but here's the one we're paying attention to. And it's in the favor of the taxpayer, and they were happy with that. So the only reason this is struck is when they talk about the end of the third calendar year, there's another paragraph that deals with the same thing, and if you want to look for it in the statute book, it's small b, small v, capital D. And that's the one that they use, and it's 2 years instead of the 3 years that we're eliminating here. So that part's pretty simple. Okay, part of the compromising and the, I guess, coming up with something both sides could agree to, you'll see I'm on line number 4 on page 4. It says, in calculating interest, and that should be interpreted as the total back interest is paid, the department, following consultation with Board of County Commissioners, the County Treasurer, shall compute a net deficiency amount. All right, so now the counties, instead of just getting a letter, they have an opportunity to come in and consult with the board and understand better why it is established the way it is. Okay? And then it says the next section is the Board of County Commissioners shall be bound by any decision made by the Department of Revenue in the course of an audit conducted under subsection B of this section, and subsection B of this section is on the previous page, and you'll see it at the top of page 2. Concerning the time period during which interest shall accrue, and that's something I haven't really talked too much about, but in our investigation of this whole thing, we find that the time period upon which the interest applies can be different when the state compares its time period and when the county compares their time period. And that was confusing to a taxpayer because it was the same audit, the audit's findings were from the same audit, but yet they might have had a 5.5-year interest accrual period for severance tax, and it might be 7.5 years for the ad valorem tax. And, that made us look sophomoric, I guess, if you look at it from, to a taxpayer, this just didn't make sense. Another example was we evidently have a coal mine that's in two different counties. And part of a settlement, it wasn't a big settlement, but part of a settlement was accruing to one county, and part was accruing to the other county because the mine spilled over in two counties. One county used a small number, like a 4-year period of lag, over which the interest rate accrued. Another one next door in the same audit was using 7.5 years. So I think the confusion to a taxpayer was self-evident in those kind of cases. Now we get into Romanet 3, and this says, except for any delinquent taxes determined to be due and owing as a result of an audit conducted under subsection B of this section, the balance of any ad valorem tax is delinquent after the day which is payable and shall bear interest at 18% annum. And that's effective today, and it'll be effective until January 15, 2015, because we put a conditioning here on line 20. It says effective January 15, delinquent taxes determined to be due and owing as a result of the audit conducted, not paid as provided by WS 39 and so forth, shall be delinquent on the following day as payable and shall bear interest at the rate set forth in paragraph 5. Paragraph 5 is right below here, and you can see what the change is here. The proceeding, and the way this works, folks, is if the interest rates are very high, so let's say higher than 12%, then the prime rate is 12%, then we charge 4% plus prime. And, you know, we're so far from that, most of us in here will never live long enough to see interest rates at 18% or something like that again. At least some of us won't. Looking at the difference here, and we've added ad valorem taxes determined to be due and owing as a result of an audit conducted under subsection B of this section, and we changed the date in the statute to 2015. Okay? And what that does is it says we're treating the audit findings the same no matter which type of tax we're talking about when it comes to penalties. You know, so you say, well, what was the reason for this? I can give you a little bit of a genesis of what happened. If you remember back, some of you can remember, back to 1981 and 82 in that area, we had prime interest rates that were up to 18%. You saw house mortgages at 16%. And at that time, we had an ad valorem interest rate that was way below. I think it was 10 or 12% prior to that time. So the legislature, quite properly, raised it up to 18. But as you look at what's happened to interest rates since then, they've gone down to, you know, nearly zero in some cases. But yet that 18% was there. And the consequence was, if you had an accrual period of 7 years and you're charging 18% simple interest, the interest penalty outweighed the amount of taxes that were due. So if you owed $100,000 in back taxes, the interest rate was, the interest accrual would be like $120,000. And, you know, I think we've reached a compromise that both sides can deal with quite well. Now, if you go to 208, it's the same thing. You'll see the same identical language. So I'm not going to waste the body's time by going through each one of these. The principle is exactly the same. And that is all there is to the bill. And as I say, there was no amendments in committee. And I'd entertain questions if anyone has any.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I read this, particularly the enforcement, is this bill restricted to just it says mineral taxes, but sales and use tax connected to the same audit does not apply?
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, it doesn't apply. And as a matter of fact, I missed one other possibility of, you know, oftentimes assessors go out and check for personal property. And that's your personal property for energy companies is a responsibility of a local assessment or the local assessor. In my county, for example, my assessor was telling me right before I came down here and I went reviewed this bill with her. She found $550 million of personal property that somehow didn't get on the personal property rolls by doing her own audit. The question is, what's the interest rate when they start sending their checks in, which they've already started doing? That's 18%. So the only time this interest uniformity comes about is when we're talking about audits. And you can kind of see why, because the audit is done at the same time by the same people, and it's, a two-page difference in the outcome. I hope that answers your question.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Patton.
I just want to point out that the audit process sometimes, which includes sales and use tax to the minerals industry, what we're talking about here is the penalty and the assessment. But if they make a mistake and report the value of a delivery of pipe, as an example, to one area, even though it's used in a different area and the company makes the decision as to which one it should be reported in, $1 million mistake is charged against the receiving state, receiving county, and without any retribution back against the error at all, and expects the receiving the error to the receiving county to repay $1 million to the state of Wyoming without any kind of a way of remedy for the error. So I'm sorry that you didn't get that included in here, but his county happened to be included, so I can understand.
Chairman Gingrey, you've been a model of patience. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A few questions. So I get the one aspect of what this bill is doing. We're going from 18 down to 12, and the fiscal note shows first year $500,000, second year $1 million. About $1 million will be coming out of the coffers of our counties. So essentially somewhat of a subsidy to the mineral companies that they won't have to pay this anymore. So $1 million a year will go away. One of my questions is, though, so you got that part. I'm real confused. If you look on page 3, and it talks about the county commissioners not being bound anymore, or they are bound. But when you go into 109 and you actually look in the statutes, it talks about the Board of County Commissioners sitting as the County Board of Equalization, and the County Board of Equalization making decisions. But this appears to be taking the power away from the counties and giving all the power to the Department of Revenue, because the language being inserted is the Board of County Commissioners shall be bound by any decision by the Department of Revenue. So the Department of Revenue will be the final arbiter of the decision. I guess my first question is, even though they're bound, can the county commissioners appeal the decision? Or by saying bound, does that mean the county commissioners have no right to appeal the decision of the state government? And you gave the example of one county did one thing with one company and the other county did another. So clearly counties have been making the decision in the past, and now we're going to take that power away from the counties, give that power to the state. Am I reading that correctly? That was that question. My other question is, why does it take 7 years? Is that the Department of Revenue that's taking so long, or is that the mineral company is not turning over information in a timely manner? And if it's the mineral company not turning over information in a timely manner, why wouldn't we want the interest rate from them? If they're the ones holding up the audit, I don't understand why they get to get this subsidy from us, because they're the ones holding up the audit.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, it's not the mineral companies that are holding up the time lags. And this is one of the handouts I was going to pass out, and I'll make it available to anybody that wants it, after I get some copies made. But let me give you a summary of what this time lag amounts to, and you can make your own judgment as to who's responsible for it. First of all, you take, you can't be auditing any years that's more recent than a year. So you've got to back up, and then you can take 3 years at a time. And so that gets you, you'll say you have money that's been overpaid or underpaid in the first year of the 3 year period. So you got the first year there, and then you got the second year in that window, and then you got the fourth year, and then half of the fifth year, and then the maximum time to complete the audit is 2 years. Okay. So now you're up to 6.5 years. Okay. And this 2 year period is the time it takes to do an audit. It's not because they're waiting for information from the companies, but, and that's been, you know, that was testimony that we received. There's sometimes when they have an audit crew that has to go, to another location for a week or two. So they just kind of close up, and we got as many complaints about the length of the audit period from either side. I mean, there's culpability, I guess, on both sides, but we did have adequate explanation that audits do take time. It's not like auditing my checkbook. And then you've got, after the audit has been done, then there's a maximum review time to issue the findings. All right, so now we're up to year 7.7. When you look at it compared to year one of the audit cycle or of the audit year. So I think the other question you had was, does this take away the ability for the County Board of Equalization to deal with this and appeal it to somebody, to the State Board of Equalization, I assume. And this is a centrally assessed a state audited situation, so any appeals, if the county isn't happy with it, they can take it to the state board, and if the companies aren't happy with it, they can take it to the state board, and they don't have any luck with that, they can take it to court, and we've got millions and millions of dollars of receipts from lawyers that we have spent doing that. Hope that answered the question. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is a solution proposed by particularly the industries in my county. If you look at our taxing process and the returns that they have to fill out because of our constitutional requirements and the way that mining is taxed, we have to tax at the mouth of the mine. So expenses inside the mine are treated different than those expenses past the mouth of the mine. And so there are all of these complicated calculations about, was the haul truck in the mine or did it come up out of the mouth of the mine? Is the crusher in the mine? And then you've got different types of mines because of their mine plan gaming the system. They'll put in-pit crushers in the pit or in-pit conveyor systems in the pit, and they're taxed at a different rate than if they come out of the ground past the mouth of the mine, and then they're taxed differently, and one's deductible and the other's not. And so you have these nearly incomprehensible calculations. Now, last year we brought to this body a bill that just said, well, let's not do these incomprehensible calculations. Let's just pick a percentage, and we don't care what the percentage is. Just pick the percentage. And that will be the percentage deductibility, part of it being in the mine and part of it being out of the mine. I can't remember. I think it was 19%. And then there's an argument that the state was losing about $5 million. So that bill that we passed in this body died in the other body. So now, and for oil and gas, it's worse. When you start talking about the modified netback for oil and gas, that gas that we produce over in the southwestern part of the state, when it comes out of the ground at the mouth of the well, because of all of the constituent components in it, is worthless. Because you've got at the wellhead, you've got carbon dioxide, you've got gas, you've got helium, you've got all kinds of sulfur products, and so it's very, very expensive to sort that all out. Well, so we figured out this way
to take the value and then net it back to the wellhead so that we could tax it, because at the wellhead it was worthless, but it really wasn't worthless. And so we worked with the oil and gas industry and created this nearly incomprehensible system of calculation so that we could get a fair tax. Well, if you're the persons doing those calculations and doing those audits, the mines are supplying all of the information, but then they're having to wait 7 years for the result. And so they just said, give us, you know, we don't mind waiting on the audit, and we don't mind paying the interest and the penalties that are due. But, you know, you're charging us 18% interest, and we can go to the bank and borrow for 4%, and that's not fair. And so what they did is say, well, instead of charging us 18, charge us 12. And that's still twice or three times or four times, depending on who your banker is, the market rate of interest. So we're still, but what we've got here is because of our own inability as a state to do these calculations, we're able to increase a company's taxes in an unfair way just because of our own delay, and that's not right. And so the major industries, the major producers in the state came to us and said, well, this is really unfair. Can you help us out? And that's what this bill is about.
Any other discussion? Representative Petroff.
Thank you. And so just one more thing to add on to that is the catch-22 that these companies are in is that if they overpay, they can wait years to get that overpayment back, and they don't get any interest on the overpayment. But if they underpay, they pay 18% interest. And, again, it's nearly impossible to calculate this absolutely correctly. And so they just – it's a no-win situation for them.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that when a committee of the whole rises to report it, do so – excuse me – all those in favor of, are you ready? No. All those in favor of House Bill 22, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 22 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 24.
House Bill 24 is introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to registration of motor vehicles, providing that the state registration fee for house trailers be based upon unladen weight, repealing a fixed fee for registration of house trailers, and providing for an effective date.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 24 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I'll take the Standing Committee Amendment. What we've simply done, as we do in some of our transportation bills, is we've moved the effective date from July 1st back to January 1st, 2015. And that just lets things fall in place on a yearly basis, and I would ask for your favorable consideration on the amendment.
Representative Hutchings.
I think he was going to. Mr. Chairman.
No. Okay. Is this discussion on the amendment?
No, sir.
Okay. We're on the amendment right now.
Fine.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Hutchings.
All right, sir, just to members of the body, I'd like to explain this bill. All of you should have in your box a copy of trailers, various sorts. What we've done with this bill is we would like to repeal a section in a Wyoming statute, 313101, double I. We want to remove section C, or repeal it, to remove the words house trailer, and we want to add that section to E. If you look at the bill on page 2, line 5, house trailers and other non-commercial vehicles based on laden weight. What we found is that people are going down to register their vehicles or their trailers, and as you can see, there are so many different types of trailers that it's hard for the treasurer to really make a determination whether this trailer is really a house trailer or it's a horse trailer with a little compartment that has a living quarters in there or not. So what we've done here with this bill is just we're going to collect fees based on weight versus whether the trailer is deemed a house trailer or not. And with that, I ask for your considerable, your vote. Yes, vote? I'm sorry.
Question.
Thank you.
I just have a question.
Yes, sir.
Chairman Teeters?
There's some concern, Mr. Chairman, about how these unladen weights are going to be calculated. We discussed a little bit about this briefly on introduction. I was curious if there would be an amendment would be friendly to the good chairman of the Transportation Committee that says that we could go based off of the manufacturer's weight, if that is available, if that information is available, that the county clerk shall use that information. Would that be a friendly amendment?
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I believe that's how the counties are going to do it now. They assured us that they could catch about 95% of them based on manufactured weight. And so if I understand what you just asked, I believe that would be a friendly amendment.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that House Bill number 24 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 24 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion carries.
Clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave the report as follows. House Bill number 7, amended, recommended do pass. Recommended do pass. House Bill number 22, recommended do pass. House Bill number 24, amended, recommended due pass, signed by Chairman Burkhart.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole report on a most interesting Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Congratulations. Brothers and sisters, in order to meet the Friday introduction deadline of the 179 House bills that we have, with your permission, we'll introduce, we're at that order of business of introduction, reading, and reference of a few more bills, just so that we can get a few more into the hopper and into the committees. I don't know. While we're placing batteries, let me make an announcement here. As a reminder, the Wyoming legislature will be traveling to Laramie tomorrow morning to help welcome home soldiers from the Wyoming Army National Guard's 133rd Engineer Company. I encourage you to join this homecoming ceremony to welcome your friends and neighbors back to Wyoming from their 400-day deployment to Bahrain. Buses will be departing from in front of the Capitol tomorrow morning at 6:45 sharp if you wish to attend. Please dress warmly for this occasion as this event will take place outside at the Laramie Airport. We've canceled tomorrow morning's House Standing Committee meetings to allow members to attend this important homecoming for Wyoming's finest. I've been informed by Representative Filer that we will have 3 buses tomorrow morning. The House will gavel in tomorrow when the buses return from the ceremony in Laramie if it is later than our normal convening time of 10 a.m. More information about these heroes will be provided to you this afternoon at your desk. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 97.
House Bill number 97, as introduced by Representative Reeder.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to education.
Representative Reeder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would also like to ask, with your privilege of, I've asked the reader to stop me at a minute and a half so I could allow 30 seconds for our chairman of education to also be able to speak on this. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, I move House Bill number 97 and ask for your favorable consideration. This bill addresses the concerns that most, if not all of us, have about our education of our children, getting us back to more state and local control where it should be. Input from the parents, guardians, teachers, and local school boards. This bill will allow us to modify the process for adoption of content and performance standards by the state board and remove us from the Common Core Consortium, establishing an advisory council to the state board for adoption of content and performance standards, prohibiting participation in the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium, prohibiting expenditure of Federal American Recovery and Reinvestment Act funds, establishing state education data security policies and protocols better known as our longitudinal data collection system, imposing a penalty and providing effective dates. There have been a couple of suggestions that have been made and would be addressed in amendments. One, for example, is on page 2, section B, line 20, provides students an opportunity to acquire sufficient knowledge and skills at a minimum to enter the University of Wyoming and Wyoming Community Colleges to prepare students for job market or post-secondary.
Chairman Teeters, 30 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just on and in favor of this proposal, I'll be the first to admit that I think we do have problems in the way our standards are adopted in Wyoming. This bill sets up a framework so we can have a comprehensive conversation. I would urge your adoption.
1 minute oppositions. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I agree that many of our education standards need significant improvement. The process has been unchanged since 1997 and has produced standards lacking in rigor, specifically the social studies standards, which I have been reviewing for several years and have been campaigning to improve so far with little effect. However, if this had been a bill from an interim committee making major changes like this 34-page bill does, it would have been discussed for the past 9 months in meetings across the state with input from parents, teachers, and school districts. Instead, the proposal received very little notice until this week and includes features like one-year public comment periods, which I think would be a little difficult. There are 12 members of these two chambers who are current or former teachers, and I see that none of them have signed on to this bill. In addition, the state teachers group is opposed to this bill, so my question is, how many teachers and school districts around the state did you talk to before having this bill drafted?
Representative Freeman for a minute.
I'll be less than a minute. I deal with 11 school districts in my job. What they are looking for is they are looking for stability and consistency. We have a process that took 2 years to adopt the Common Core. There was plenty of opportunities to look at those records. In my day job, I have to go, let me just put it this way. 17% of Wyoming students right now meet all four sections, according to the ACT, to be ready for college. 50% of the people that come to community colleges need remediations. Wyoming has had its own test and has had its own standards for a year, and we have not done very well. To have a national standard and to tie ourselves to that, I think, is a good experiment.
Representative Reeder, 30-second rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thanks for the comments, and I'm...
What? You get, the way this works is you get a 2-minute inter- oh wait, we do have one more. I'm sorry. One more 1-minute thing. Thank you. Okay, we did 2 1-minute things. So now we've got 1 30-second thing. Representative Reeder, I was right the first time, I thought. Okay.
Alrighty. Well, thank you again for those comments, and I'm hoping we'll be able to discuss those. We have many people that are here today and around the state of Wyoming that are watching and listening to this decision we're about to make. Please allow this bill to be introduced and reinforce that this is truly a republic.
Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins. Blickry.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Davison. Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
no.
Filer,
no.
Freeman,
no.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
no.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Hutchings,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Madden, Mater,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
no.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
no.
Paxton,
aye.
Petroff,
no.
Pieperinen,
aye.
Reeder,
aye.
Simlek,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
no.
Walters,
no.
Watt,
aye.
Wilson,
no.
Winters,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 47 aye, 13 no.
House Bill 97 will be introduced and referred to Committee Number 4, Education. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 96.
House Bill 96 is introduced by Representative Stubson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to professional assistance programs.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move introduction of House Bill 96 and ask for your favorable consideration. This bill addresses, among our professional programs in the state, there are a number of professional assistance programs. That includes the Board of Medicine, the vets, the bar, a number of different professions around the state. And typically those professional assistance programs deal with drug and alcohol abuse. So if you are a physician, you struggle with those issues, you can seek assistance, and that is held in confidence, but it allows people to go seek assistance before it impacts their patients or clients. One issue that remains untouched, though, and that many of these folks would like to address is mental and behavioral issues. And the same confidentiality is not there. The same availability of treatment is not there. And so this bill simply allows those same avenues to be open for professionals to seek help before it becomes a problem and impacts the folks they're doing work for. So I'd ask for your aye vote.
Any 1-minute rebuttals? Hearing none and sensing you're ready to vote, the Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins. Blickry. Brown, Burkhart, Byrd, Campbell, Kennedy, Coleman, Connolly, Davison, Eklund, Esquivel, Filer, Freeman, Gay, Gingery, Goggles, Greer, Green,
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparik.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
Mader.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton. Paxton,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Pieperinen,
aye.
Reeder,
aye.
Simlek,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Walters,
aye.
Watt,
aye.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave, aye. Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 aye.
House Bill number 96 will be introduced and referred to Committee number 7, Corporations. Just as a bit of trivia, that was the first bill I ever ran as a freshman 10 years ago. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 93.
House Bill 93 is introduced by Representative Hunt.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to alcoholic beverages.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Currently, there is a limit on how much wine can be shipped to an individual household. And I'm glad I have that written down because I just dropped my paper. So anyway, that current limit stands at 18 liters in any 12-month period. And 18 liters equates to around 2 dozen bottles or 2 bottles a month. And so what this bill aims to do is repeal that limit so that people can order in as much as they want. And this comes from a constituent who brought this to my attention. The issue being that if you sign up for certain Wine of the Month clubs, some certain companies who do that cannot ship wine to Wyoming. And people cannot participate in those particular programs simply because what they're ordering is more than 18 liters in any 1 year. So this is in the interest of free market. It's in the interest of consumer choice, and so I would hope that you would support this bill. Thank you very much.
Any one-minute rebuttals? So hearing none and sensing you're ready to vote, all the chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Conflict.
Barlow, conflict. Berger.
Aye.
Okay. Barlow, would you please confirm your vote for me? Barlow, aye. Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Blickery.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Feiler.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
No.
Green. Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
no.
Hunt,
aye.
Hutchings,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
Mader,
no.
McKim,
no.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
no.
Nicholas, Nicholas, aye. Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Pieperinen.
No.
Reeder.
Aye.
Simlek.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne. Throne.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Watt.
No.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave. Zwanitzer Dave? Mr. Speaker?
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Yagi? Aye to no. Blickery? Aye to no. Watt? No to aye. Larson? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 46 aye, 14 no.
House Bill number 93 will be introduced and referred to Committee number 7, Corporations. I have to apologize to Representative Hunt. I referred to him as Representative Hunt, forgetting that he was the chairman of Committee 99. Thanks to the good representative from the Southwest, he pointed out that correction. I also have another announcement to make. Representative Lax was counted as absent on the vote on House Bill 78. He should have been counted as excused, and the journal will so reflect. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, for planning purposes, introductions today will do the next one on the list, House Bill 90. The next one after that will be House Bill 89. Then we will do House Bill 98. And we will stop there on introductions for the day.
Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 90.
House Bill 90 is introduced by Representative Larson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to juveniles.
Representative Larson.
Mr. Speaker, I move that House Bill 90, and ask for your favorable consideration, members of the House. Up in my part of the world, we was reviewing this with our county attorney and the judge, and in the statutes it says that when a juvenile is taken into custody, that as soon as possible, after meets certain requirements, after everything is done, it says that the child shall be released in the care of his parents, guardian, custodian, or other reasonable adult upon that person's written promise to present the child before the court upon request. The concern that we have is the other reasonable adult and how that is defined and determined. It has some real potential problems. We'd like to have our good judiciary committee look at that with a little more detail and ask for your permission to proceed forward. Thank you.
Any 1 minute rebuttals? Seeing none and sensing you're ready to vote, the chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Halverson. Harshman, Harvey, Hunt, Hutchings, Yagi, Kasparic, Kirkbride, Croker, Crone, Larson, Lockhart, Laux, Madden, Mader, McKim, Miller, Moniz, Nicholas, Northrup, Patton, Paxton, Petroff, Piperinen, Reeder, Semlick, Summers, Stubson, Teeters, Throne, Walters, Watt, Wilson, Winters, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 60 aye.
House Bill number 90 will be introduced and referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 89.
House Bill 89 is introduced by Representative Larson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the legislature.
Representative Larson.
Mr. Speaker, I would move House Bill 90 and ask for your favorable consideration. Folks, what this bill does is give Management Council the authority to use the appropriated funds, which is around $10,000 associated with this bill, to reimburse those legislators living in districts that encompass a large geographic area for the extraordinary mileage expense for travel within their districts relating to constituent activities. Management Council would have the latitude to determine the specific rules to qualify the mileage for reimbursement. The genesis of this bill goes when I was looking at how far some of our representatives have to travel. There's one House district where the representative, if he had to make individual trips to each town, he would travel 2,205 miles. In another district to the west side of the state, a representative in this House making individual trips to each town would have to travel 1,266 miles. There are similar examples in the Senate, with one district on the east side of the state that would have to travel 1,254 miles. The concerns I have about this is the availability for citizens to have access to their legislator, and citizens considering to run for legislative office might feel disqualified if they don't have the personal financial resources to use for the excessive travel requirements of their district. Thank you.
1 minute opposition. Representative or Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just feel like this discriminates against those of us in urban districts, and I wonder if we could consider an amendment to fund my tennis shoe expenses for walking my district, or perhaps my bicycle expenses. And if you can't tell that was tongue-in-cheek, it was.
Any other one-minute oppositions? A 30-second rebuttal to that opposition, Representative Larson. Hearing none and sensing you're ready to vote, the chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker. Aye. Carlo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
No.
Blevins.
Aye.
Blickery.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
No.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Greer.
No. Green.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
No.
Hutchings.
No.
Yagi.
Yes.
Kasparic.
No.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
No.
Mater.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Pieperinen,
aye.
Reeder.
Aye.
Reeder conflict. Simlek,
no.
Summers,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Walters,
no.
Watt. Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Representative Green, would you confirm your vote for me, please?
Aye.
Thank you. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 49 aye, 10 no, 1 conflict.
House Bill 89 will be introduced and referred to Committee Number 12, Rules. On these constituent service allowance bills, nobody in this body, unless they have to stand election, will ever receive that constituent service allowance unless they're elected to the next office, because we can't change our compensation midstream. It's just a technical clarification, which will probably result in an amendment to the bill, but that's another story. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 98.
House Bill 98 is introduced by Representative Patton.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to state investments.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 98 has to do with changing one thing, so it seems, sounds like a simple bill, simple being that it changes the length of time from 3 years to 4 years on page 2, line 3. Why do this? Why do it in a period in our budget session? Because if we can do this, what the impact of it is to allow the as you will note, the investment services that evaluate state policy will be in place for the new administration, the Land Investment Board, for at least 1 year. So you get a 2 year or a year and a half to a 2 year overlap of the state treasurer's ability to have some consistency on the oversight that the people that we hire as an investment advisor on who is hired and the asset allocation. So you get some continuum instead of having a whole new administration coming in facing the fact that here are we going to vote on a new new staff person. So with that, I move the adoption for your consideration.
Is there any one-minute rebuttals? Hearing none and sensing you're ready to vote, the chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparik. Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
Mader.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Pieperinen.
Aye.
Reeder.
Aye.
Simlick.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne. Walters.
Aye.
Watt.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 60 aye.
House Bill 98 is introduced and will be referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. We're now at that order of business of standing committee reports.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill number 5, Education Required School Bus Video Equipment, -2, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blickery, Burkhart, Esquivel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred to House Bill 41, Emergency Medical Technician Pension Plan, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blickley, Burkhart, Esquivel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 46, Public Employee Pension Plans Contributions, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blickley, Burkhart, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, 1 no, Representative Esquivel, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 51, Fireman's Pension Plan Benefits, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blickery, Burkhart, Harshman, Nicholas, Stubson, 1 no, Representative Esquivel, and 1 conflict, Representative Moniz, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 83, Insurance Coverage of Inherited Enzymatic Disorders, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blickery, Burkhart, Esquivel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 32, Snowmobile Permit Registration Fees, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Halverson, Yagi, Pieperinen, 2 noes, Representative Gay and Hutchings, 1 excuse, Representative Crone.
We're now at that order of business of special orders and committee announcements. Are there any committee announcements? Madam Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow upon noon adjournment to hear House Bill 18, Coroner Standards Enforcements, and House Bill 25, Funeral Service Practitioners Act. Thank you.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow upon noon recess in room H8 to take up House Bill 8, Court Reporter Fee Elimination, House Bill 50, District Court Filing Fee, House Bill 33, Jury Pool Selection, House Bill 23, Landowner's Duty to Trespasser, House Bill 11, Controlled Substances, and House Bill 43, Children in Need of Supervision. If we don't get to all of them over the noon, we will do them upon adjournment.
Chairman Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 6, TRW, will meet Friday the 14th at 8 o'clock in the morning to go over two bills, House Bill 30, Prohibited Harassment of Wildlife, House Bill 48, Fishing with Artificial Light.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow, 10 minutes after adjournment, to discuss two House bills, number 59, Authorized Motor Vehicle Lights, and House Bill 60, Light Trailer Titles.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No committee announcements. I did have privilege to the floor.
Certainly.
I know things will be different tomorrow morning because a lot of people are going to be going to welcome home our troops. But I still wanted to announce that our legislative prayer breakfast will go on at 6:30 in the morning at Little American. Just a reminder, and you should have had a notice of that in your in-basket.
Chairman Teeters. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet immediately upon adjournment in H-10 for consideration of House Bill 3.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment in room H-17 to hear House Bill 38, Taxidermy Licenses, and House Bill 61, Failure to Extinguish or Contain Fire.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee appropriations number 2 will meet Thursday, February 13th at 12:30 p.m. in room 204 to continue hearing on House Bill 70, State Parks Peace Officer Benefits, and House Bill 55, Funding of Substance Abuse, and any other re-referred bills as time allows.
Brothers and sisters of the 62nd, tomorrow and Friday are going to be challenging days. We'll do everything we can to get all of the bills in. That's going to take lots and lots of time. Just be ready for it. We've got, I think, 30 bills. I didn't count them. 30 or 31 bills coming in tomorrow. And then we'll have all of the remainder of the bills that make it to my desk on Friday. So just be ready for big workload days on Thursday and Friday. Mr. Majority Floor, at 6:45 in the morning, don't forget the buses to Laramie to welcome home the heroes that have been deployed for 400 days. We'll meet them at the Laramie Airport tomorrow morning, plane scheduled to land about 8:10. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, general file for tomorrow. House Bill 34, 5, 41, 46, 51, 83, and 32. Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 11 a.m. tomorrow, February 13, 2014.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, could you change that to, I think what the announcement I read was 10 a.m. or such time as we get back from the buses?
Mr. Speaker, what he said.
You have heard the motion that we adjourn until 10 a.m. or such time that we get back from the buses tomorrow. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House is in recess until tomorrow.